Look, Matt.
Where? Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, my goodness. Cool.
Wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong! Las Culturistas calling. Don't mind us. We're just discussing whether or not Hot Engineer Doug was a thought back in the day.
And I had a tense issue because I said he still is.
You feel he is? He's married.
You know, Thoughts can be married. Thoughts is married too.
Thoughts is married too. That's actually a rule of culture. That's rule of culture number 31. Thoughts is married too. Should we ask him what his sexual life was like when he was young?
Yeah, Doug, come on.
Doug, can you come in?
Doug, can you come in, please?
Can you come in, please?
Doug, what were you like? Were you a thought back in the day? Do you still consider yourself? Do you identify as a thought?
A thought?
I do think that maybe once I was considered a thought.
Wow! Oh! It would be a shame if you weren't.
I don't know anymore. I mean, come on. You guys.
Doug, you were a tall musician. Like, that's all anyone needs.
Yeah.
I, you know, maybe. You're flattering me.
Why are you being so bashful?
I don't know. You tell me.
How did you meet your wife?
I moved in across the street from her.
Oh my God, rom-com vibes?
Yes.
who made the first move? Yeah, well, how did it go?
I helped her move some big boxes that she came in one day. Yeah, like
a stereo
or something. I was like, oh, yes. We got
an audio file.
You should meet her one day. She's great.
I would love for her to sort of pop into the frame one of these days. Because she must be some woman to get a handle on you.
Oh, I think I'm the lucky one in this exchange. But
don't sell yourself short, Doug.
One day. I want her to come in all the time. She won't do it.
Hey, are you uncomfortable? Are we making you uncomfortable?
No, look at him.
No, I like talking about my wife.
Aww. Yes, well, you should talk about her more.
Whenever you have a thing to say about your wife throughout this episode, I want you to just come in. Don't wait to be invited.
Okay.
Just know that today on the podcast, it's open door. Because, Doug, really, family is the most important thing, huh?
I agree. 100%. Yeah.
Doug, I want you to come in unprompted at least twice this episode.
Oh, no. Okay. I'll do it.
Can you do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. This episode's title is This Episode Features Doug. In all caps.
You guys are going to get me laid tonight. This is great.
Oh, yes! Wow, that rocks.
You're not going to wait until Wednesday?
No way.
For the episode drop, and she goes, babe, I heard you talk about me on Las Culch, my favorite podcast.
I mean, she would say that, and she will hear it on Wednesday, but she might know.
Does she listen to it? No.
Of course, yeah.
Shut up.
No, she doesn't.
He's flirting with us now.
She does. She loves you guys.
No, why haven't we met her?
She won't come in. She's shy.
She's shy because of Bowen.
No. Okay, Doug. Doug will come back on twice this episode. Okay.
Yeah. So it's an open door policy, but there is a limit of 2 times you can come in.
Okay.
Come in a third time and I'm gonna be pissed off.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
Get out. Bye.
We love you.
I love you though. I'm really happy that we did that. I feel like
I know,
that was
me too.
Because, you know, the readers, like...
They're sick of us.
Sometimes they get so sick of us, they just want to say, can they bring Doug in? Because that's the guy I want to hear about. They keep saying how hot he is.
Doug is a hit.
He's a massive hit.
Massive hit. Can I tell you who else is a massive hit this past Halloween weekend? My sister, Matt Rogers, caused a gay Instagram, just a manic cascade of laughs and relatability. She dressed up as a pantry girl. If you don't know, these are the teenage girls who live on Long Island, mm-hmm. who take the ferry every morning to work at the Pines Pantry in Fire Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Matt really nailed their essence down.
You know what? The girl, I named her Jen. She lives inside me. She is my girlfriends in high school who all did work at the market. My sister also worked there. So I have like a deep connection to the pantry girls. I don't
Chelsea
just know
worked
them.
At the pantry?
Yes. Not the Pines Pantry. She worked at Ocean Bay Park.
But you know what? So many people in the comments on that Instagram post were like, as a former pantry girl, I go,
yeah, they were
oh
coming
my
out of the woodwork.
God.
They really were.
And the fact that they have not been completely disgusted by the behavior of gay men as a collective to follow you and to be mm-hmm. like, and to recognize themselves in you, I think it's beautiful.
I think that I here's the thing. I tried to represent them as truthfully as possible.
You did. You didn't try. You succeeded.
There was no, I wasn't creating fantasy here. You know what I mean? It was just authentic, grounded, let's say Julianne Moore type performance. Grounded, very Kristen Stewart Spencer.
I would say
that my costume was the Kristen Stewart Spencer of the year without dressing up like that at all. Like my performance as Jen was very Kristen Stewart and Pablo Larraín Spencer. You were a success too, though.
No, I wasn't. We're
as Spider Dude.
No, we can't talk about it. I have not felt this kind of shame in a while, and I think that's healthy. That I like feel like not proud of something that I've done, that I've executed. It's okay. I just wanted to lift up you. I think you really.
Thank you.
I thought so fondly of you today. I go, Matt really did that. I'm so happy for her.
The way that Halloween's usually go for me is I don't know what the fuck I'm doing until about an hour before. And I really almost bailed on that costume. And I was like, are people going to even give a fuck? Like, am I? And then I was worried because I was going to have to wear the footwear all night because everyone knows those girls wear the big sock, chunky socks with the Nike chunky slide, sock. You know.
Or like a Birk or something.
Right.
They're not crunchy enough to wear Birkenstocks, and that's okay.
Right. No. Yeah. And then what I will say, one piece of criticism I got about the Pantry Girls look is someone said, I know that people think we show up in footwear like that, but actually, like, there's a lot of walking and you couldn't just show up in like socks and a bad shoe. You need a soul support moment.
People took issue with the footwear.
Yeah, they did.
That's the danger of, like, you know, dressing up as a type of person, because you weren't you were dressed up as Jen, obviously, but you were also like, this is a kind of person that is geographically, socioeconomically specific,
right? And they are I think they're historically important, and so
important.
let's just say this, like, we shot the movie Fire Island this summer, and for people who thought that maybe there wouldn't be the representation of the Pantry Girl, think again.
We will not reveal at this time who plays a pantry girl.
We will not reveal at this time. We will only say they have been a guest on Lost Cult.
They have been a guest on Lost Cult. They have done live Lost Cult shows several times. That's all we'll say.
A favorite guest of ours, but like, it, and I'm just going to say a performance that I felt was dropped in, that I felt represented. It got it exactly.
Yep. Oh, a queer legend, honestly.
And
I've given something away. She's part of the acronym. That's right.
Welcome to the arena. Whenever anyone is part of the acronym, I say, well, welcome to the arena.
Well, welcome to the arena. Are you ready? Prepare for battle.
Prepare for battle. Oh my God. That just, you know what that reminds me of.
Mulan. No.
No. When we did Four Nights in Orlando, you iconically delivered the line, prepare for battle.
Prepare for battle. And then I posed.
You know, I was just back in Disney World.
I know. Wait, we can't do this. I'm like, there's something's going on with me lately where I'm like, I feel like Ariel in the grotto. I go, like, truly, like, out of the sea, wish I could be part of that world.
You are part of that world.
I don't know. I'm like, I thought to myself, oh God, I've been robbed. I've not been robbed. I've been blessed with this life, but I've also been, I've not been given the chance in recent years to, like, watch the leaves change, you know?
Like, we can't willy-nilly just be like, Orlando trip this October.
I know.
And like, we used to just reason. Willy-nilly say that. We really
and can
did.
Can I just say, I kind of miss that time in my life.
Yeah, but you're always going to miss the great before. I mean, that's the thing, is it's like, you never know the good times are the good times.
This is a little sad, but I don't mean for it to be. This is just like when I first realized that, like, this is an interesting line of work that we're in, which was, my grandmother passed away three summers ago, and I was the only member in the family who couldn't go to the funeral because I was what? Shooting.
That is rough. That
and
is really hard.
I wasn't that high up on the call sheet, and like there wasn't a way around it, and I remember this. That's a regret that I'll carry with me.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, what I said at the time and what I believe is true is, like, whenever things just don't happen like in the way you'd want it to, just know that your relative, whoever passes away, your grandmother is so proud of you that you get she gets to, you know, be part of why you exist.
But Matt, this is like the relationship I have with this grandma on my mom's side, it's full fucking nutty. It's like, oh, I was such a little piece of shit to her growing up, even though she was the best, the smartest, the funniest, like someone who, like, I like, we like, it was love all along, but like there was that developmental period in like middle school when she like was staying with us in Colorado. Where, like, I was just such a fucking jackass to her. And she was all she ever did was love me. And it literally is that. And then I'm just like, damn, you know, like she, anyway, like this business, like you can't go for a damn funeral. Ugh. Anyway,
you know, it's a little crazy how strict the scheduling all is. And ultimately, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I was thinking the other day, all my grandparents are gone now too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, I was on this family trip with my mom, my dad, and my sister. So it was sort of like old times. Like,
core,
you know,
four.
Like that is the core four very much. So that is really where we would go all the time on family mm-hmm, vacations mm-hmm. growing up. And I just remember, I was walking in Epcot, and I remember like we were walking past Soarin', and next door used to be, it's called like Journey into Imagination now. It used to be Honey, yeah. I Shrunk the Audience.
Oh, I miss that ride so much.
Yeah, so it was like a 3D show.
When the dog would sneeze at you and yes. you felt the spray. Oh my God.
Yeah, iconic. This is like OG Epcot. So it was called yeah. Honey, I or maybe not, but like Honey, it was there for the a audience. While.
Yeah.
But I was so, this is a glimpse in that's going to surprise no reader that has listened to this for a while, but I was so that kid. I used to read all the books about Orlando theme parks before we'd go. Like I would know about every ride and show, and I would like uh-huh. list out like, okay, we're gonna do this. Like that was what I liked to do when I was like 7, 8, 9 years old.
Of the baby Rick Steves of Orlando
in many ways, not every way, but many ways. But I remember I had read about Honey I Shrunk the Audience, that there was a scary part where a snake like lurches out
yeah
at you.
Yeah,
and it's 3D, so that was horrifying. So I remember we got to that show, and I was probably 7 mm-hmm. and I just freaked out. Like this snake was getting at me, like the ooh. Way I am now about horror movies. I was like that as a kid about the snake, and I started mm-hmm. to cry because my dad was like, I don't understand oh. why you don't want to do this. Like you've been talking about it for months, like we're so excited to be here, and now you don't want to do this. Like I'm gonna hear about it for the rest of the trip. And he was getting like short with me. And my grandmother, who was my favorite, I mean, I loved my grandmother so
dad's
much.
Dad or Marianne, dad's mom or
dad's yeah. mom. And she was on the trip and she was like, I'm going to sit with him out here. And I just remember, I remember her sitting with me, and she just like sat with me, and we like hung out by like these jumping fountains. Wow, this is just like, I'm just saying.
Oh
a
my
memory.
God. No, wow. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know that area.
I just remember my grandmother being like, I didn't really want to do it either, so this is better for me. We get to sit down and watch the water, and we just watched it. And my dad came out, and I think he could tell, he was like disappointed that he had like snapped at me a little bit. He was like, well, you were right about the snake, and it was scary. And then we walked on, and we did something else. But I don't know, just that memory of my grandmother
flashback.
Popped in. Yeah.
I'm sorry to make it all maudlin. You were no. actually going to talk about Orlando, and how was the trip?
It was a nice trip, but it was nice for that reason too, because that was a place where I had so many formative memories, and I actually did get a little emotional, you know, being there with my family, because it's you know, it's that thing where it's all the same. Well, not the same, because things come.
But I have that thing with Disney where I go at the parks where I'm like, I've been coming here all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still here in a way that is like monumental in your own memory. Like, oh, this is like, this was it was the biggest deal in the world when I would come here.
Yeah. So the essences of it are there.
Yeah. And I'm like, I mean, Ellie's been several times. Sophie went to Disneyland when my sister went to LA with my mom.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I can't wait to, and I did go to Euro Disney with Ellie when she was like an infant, but I'm like, I can't wait. Like, it'll be really surreal when I go there with the girls when they're, you know, old enough to like really get into it. And I'll be like, yeah. wow, like that was, I was them like, you know, 25 years ago or whatever. Like that'll be fun.
There is something special about it, because you see how excited kids are to be there. And then also it is just like a lot of family memories, and it was just fun. I mean, we went during the Food and Wine Festival where there's like the countries all have. We did that. And
we did that. We were
got fucking drunk.
So drunk and stoned, and ate every little food thing from the station.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love the Food and Wine Festival.
It was like, it was such a blast. And like, also the breaking news was, and what I wanted to tell you about was, so you know when we had BD Wong on,
yes.
we talked about how he was acting in the pre-show of the Velocicoaster. So I have seen it and ridden it now. And it's truly crazy and good.
Oh,
and
wait, I haven't seen it. I've only seen him in the Jurassic Park,
World.
Jurassic World ride at Universal Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me everything.
So it's like, the theme of the ride is like, you get to do a roller coaster through like a raptor paddock. Yeah. And it actually is funny because they do this whole pre-show where Bryce Dallas Howard, who actually serves in this pre-show, is like, this open air experience is amazing. You'll get so close to raptors, but don't worry, the ride vehicles make it so they can't touch you. And Chris Pratt, you know, he's just kind of like popping off like, this is a bad idea, et cetera. The classic theme park give and take. Yeah. Yeah. And so BD is sort of in it, like talking about the science of it all. And that man can deliver. He is giving you, and he looks so hot in the pre-show
video. Of course he does. Ugh. Oh my God, does he have like a side buzz, like a side fade?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, what a legend.
He's really delivering in any way you could want him to. And then the ride was unreal. So it was so good. I can't wait to go on it with my sister.
Me?
Yeah, you.
When are we going?
Well, like we said, it's not just a willy-nilly thing anymore because of our absolute careers. But one day we'll go.
We've been meaning to go for, I would say, the last 36 months.
Right.
Like, it's been a while.
It has been a long time. But I also think that, and this is crazy for me to be the one that says this, I do think we should go to Berlin. You know? Might be nice.
I would love to go to Berlin with you. I think we would have a very fun time.
We've been talking about it.
We've been talking about it, and look, we gotta go, and the world's ending. I don't know. Anyway, sorry. I'm, like, coming in with bleakness in my
You're
heart.
Not. You're not. And I also have to say, like, we did just go on vacation. We went to Ojai.
We went on vacation, but honestly, can I say something?
What?
I don't feel that rested.
Bowen, this always happens. Can I ask you a question? Are you having trouble sleeping?
Yes.
Well, how do we figure that out?
I don't know. I really don't know the solution to it. I think it'll just have a nice little, I'll have a nice little lull around the holidays where I maybe get to catch up on it. But this is just a thing that I need to maybe address.
Yeah.
Medically.
I think maybe because that's like, I mean, here's the thing, readers, you gotta sleep. You gotta sleep.
It's a rule of culture number 52.
You gotta sleep. Okay? I just feel like so much is rooted in that. Like when I get a good, even solid, like 8 to 10 hours, I feel it, and this is news to no one, but it truly, you realize how important it is. That and drinking water.
Well, I should say that I've been hydrating better than ever before. And that is actually doing a lot of work. This is so boring. I'm sorry.
I think maybe it's the cigarettes, though. I'll tell you that. I think the cigarettes might be keeping you up.
I'm kind of off of them. I was not smoking cigarettes when we were in Ojai, and I still had trouble sleeping.
Liar.
Well, I mean, it's also because I had to, like, get up and do shit for other people. Whatever. Ugh.
Well,
not for you. Matt and I were working on a very fun project and talking about ideas.
Get this. We were working on a very fun project and talking about ideas. Maybe you're about to experience Matt and Bowen like you've never experienced them before.
Oh my God.
Different mediums that different you might not expect.
You're giving away too much.
No, I didn't. I didn't. Well, listen, I when you said the thing about hits in the beginning, when you were like, you said something about hits.
I said, Doug is a hit. You were a hit at Halloween.
As a Halloween. I thought you were going to mention another hit, which, and so just to sort of talk about pop culture, because that is sort of what the podcast purports to do. It has been several weeks, and we talked all about how Adele was going to release Easy on Me. And since then she has, we've heard the whole thing, and it's become the number one song in the world. And did you see today they released her track listing?
I did not see. Oh my God, do you want to talk about it? Can you inform me?
Shall we read the track listing?
Yeah, is it on her Instagram?
Let's see. Adele track list. So this is the track list for 30. She has revealed it. She has decided. Okay, so get this. If you could guess who Adele is going to do her first duet ever with, who would you think it is? It won't be correct.
I know, like it would be someone not totally in her market, but slight overlap with it. So I would, you know, you'd say someone like a Leon Bridges, you know, like someone like that.
It's Chris Stapleton.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. It's a duet. Oh,
it's on the Easy on Me bonus track.
It's the deluxe version moment. Easy on Me. Duet with Chris Stapleton is a bonus track on 30.
Interesting. Errol Gardner I'm seeing as well. Mm-hmm. All Night Parking. I mean, oh, these are fun. These are fun titles, though.
So get this. I think if we're going to judge based on song title, whether or not the song will be good or not, Strangers by Nature, that's a good song.
Strangers by Nature, My Little Love, Cry Your Heart Out. It's honestly like that's the essence of every Adele song.
Number five is Oh My God. Oh My God.
That's going to be great.
This rule of culture off air, and we want to tell everyone it's rule of culture number 94. When it comes to exclamations, oh my god, leads the pack.
And it's true. I mean, there's nothing more organically exclamatory than oh my god.
Oh my god. It's like as natural as breathing.
The fact that it's three syllables and it's even more natural than something with less syllables is astounding. It's not like, oh no. It's like, oh my God.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Your brain just wants to do all three syllables.
It's a three syllable thing. Bowen Yang, Matt Rogers. Oh my God.
Three syllable thing. Doug, get out. Doug, come in.
Wait, was he just coming in?
No. But I was thinking that's an example of like a three syllable thing.
Oh,
but,
Doug, come in.
But Doug, you can't come in now.
Not yet.
You can't come in invited. You have to come in on your own.
Uninvited.
Time. Uninvited.
So continuing to read through the track list. Can I get it?
I hope that's not like a Britishism. Like, can you, you know, don't let me down. Can you dig it? Like the Beatles or anything?
Can I get it?
You know what? Okay, not to pivot from Adele too much. Okay, is there anything else you want to say about Adele?
Well, I just want to say that number seven is Trackless. The ones everyone is really getting excited about is called I Drink Wine.
I mean, mass appeal, four quadrants. Everybody drinks it.
Yeah.
Every gender, every age group. You know,
everyone drinks wine.
Everyone drinks wine. And I think that's the beauty of wine is that...
Now go ahead and pivot.
Well, I was going to say, like, I need to, like, I think I'm due for, I'm sure you don't feel this way, but I truly feel the pull to really, and this is going to sound so annoying, but to really get back into the Beatles.
Into the Beatles?
Yeah.
You know, I have the White Album on vinyl.
That's one of the best albums of all time. I was doing this thing with Thessaly, and then, like, one of the producers was this big Beatlehead. He's like, Liverpool came up or something, and then Cecily was just rattling off all of these things about the Beatles, and I like was just there being like, oh yeah, that doc came out about, you know, Let It Be and that concert on the roof when they, you know, were hating each other, and apparently this documentary talks about how it's like actual footage from that time, and like they were actually in a good place, but they had to like put forward this I'm probably butchering this, and readers have probably seen the doc and can attest to this, but like it's about how like they were kind of in a decent place, even though they were supposed to put forth the image of where there's tension, which is such an interesting inversion of like what celebrity sort of image usually is about.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're supposed to get along, but actually they hate each other. Like this was like the opposite. And then, but anyway, Cecily was rattling off all these Beatles facts, and I was like, I used to be so fucking into them.
Really?
Late high school, early college. Like early college was when I was like, oh wait, like Brian Wilson. Like I need to get back into like the Beach Boys.
Yeah, I love
so deep into the Beach Boys. And like I was just. I think it's one of the most important pop cultural moments when
absolutely.
I'm saying when it was Beatles came out with like Revolver, and then so Brian Wilson was like, we need to make an album that's as good as this. They made Pet Sounds, and then Paul McCartney and the Beatles were basically like, we need to make an album as good as this. Like, like that little like exchange, that back and forth, like making like three incredible pop albums, rock albums. I'm like, wow, that must have been crazy. That must have been like, you know, when Beyonce came out with Self-Titled and then Taylor came out with 1989.
They were the original B and Taylor. that was when the girls were growing. Okay, Doug, so this Doug, is when
perfect.
Doug is going to come
perfect.
In.
Doug
has popped in.
What do you have to say?
The Beatles. I mean,
you're Beatles man.
Were
I'm
you
sure.
Doug whistling him?
No, I wasn't.
Were you Doug whistling Doug?
I was not Doug whistling. I've honestly been thinking about this a lot. Doug, go ahead.
The Beatles are single-handedly the most important thing in pop. Music.
And pop music.
I mean, 1964, everything changed. It all went.
It's so true.
Can you school us? Like, can you give us like the quick Sparks Notes, Cliff's Notes?
I mean, the Beatles,
everyone knows. I mean, we're not saying anything new, obviously, but I think it's important for not enough of us, like millennial Gen Z cusp gays, like, I think the children have forgotten.
We know about the British invasion. We know about the ascendance of Beatlemania. We know about, you know, it was truly the first, like, or not the first Blues Elvis, but like it was an iconic moment of intense fandom that was felt all around the globe. But tell us something we don't know, Doug.
Yes.
I mean, they affected everybody. They weren't macho. Like, the Beatles affected every culture. That's why they're the Beatles. They literally... Everything comes from the Beatles that I can see. I mean, Taylor Swift wouldn't exist without the Beatles.
I agree.
They are,
and that's
that
the way. Big. That's the way you sort of get us to listen. Well, I'm gonna, as the kids say, gag you, Doug.
Okay.
And Bowen, you must have been shook when. So we were in Ohio at this restaurant. And
oh my God!
Why
Doug,
did you leave?
Back. Why did you leave?
I don't
Doug.
Understand why you left.
Doug, that,
I was
talking
to you. Wanted
me out of here.
No,
we will dismiss you when we want to dismiss
will
dis- you.
This is the rules of you coming in. Come in uninvited, and then you leave when we say. It can happen one more time after this. Don't fuck up again. Oh, I've been having a lot of fun with you today, and it could end like that.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to tell you something, and don't leave in the middle of me telling you something.
We went to a restaurant in Ojai called The Ranch House. It was lovely.
And
really
we're sitting
place.
There. We have this amazing waitress.
Well,
we're
first
having,
of all,
we had a five-course dinner.
Let's just describe the vibe. The vibe was like, oh,
trees.
This. I bet it was trees, the little bridges to different areas. It felt like a chic Casa Bonita.
Very folklore.
and me and Sudi and Matt were all like, oh, this is the kind of restaurant that like probably was huge and so chic and cool in the 60s. Like, we said that to each other. Like, this is a place where you probably imagine like people in the 60s coming to and feeling very... I don't know, just refined or cultured. And then our waitress tells us, we're like, this is such a lovely restaurant.
We were complimenting the place, how much fun we had. And we were saying the food was great. And she goes, well, you know.
There's a lot of history here.
Well, the first thing she says was, I waited on Luke Bryan. And we were like, oh, cool. And then she goes, and right over that bridge is where John and Yoko wrote Imagine.
Imagine.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's big.
Doug, what are your thoughts on Pet Sounds? This isn't the Beatles, but what are your thoughts on Pet Sounds?
I love Pet Sounds.
Yeah, so good.
Maybe my favorite album of all time.
It's up there for sure. The harmonies and things are unprecedented. They went other places.
Baroque pop. You don't get Fleet Foxes without Pet Sounds. You don't get tight harmonies like that without the Beach Boys in general. I mean, like, they didn't invent harmonies, but they like... It was very like, I mean, like, was Phil Spector involved with the Beach Boys ever? It just felt like very Wall of Sound without Phil Spector's... taint on it.
I don't remember.
Got it.
Wasn't Phil Spector more the ladies of the time?
Phil Spector was more the ladies, but like, I think, but like, I'm saying in terms of like that lush.
Yeah, the Wall
pop
of Sound.
Music, Wall of Sound. Like, that was like his thing. And like, I feel like Pet Sounds was that concurrently or maybe slightly before, slightly after. I'm bad with my music history. But Doug, what's your favorite album of all time?
Oof.
Do you have one? Do you have top three? Top two?
I mean, Pet Sounds is up there.
Really?
Revolver is up there. God, I'm
putting you on the spot. I'm sorry. And you look uncomfortable.
It's one of those questions where you listen to something and then you love it. And then somebody asks you
that's a horrible, I hate myself for asking. No, don't worry, Doug.
Why would you hate yourself for asking
because
this man who's a musician
those...
what his top three albums of all time are? The fact that he can't answer is his like floppage.
It's like when people ask you like who your favorite actress is or like what your favorite, like.
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst. Let's move on.
Anna's coming onto the chat. Anna.
Anna what? Oh.
Bye, Anna.
This is just a nightmare.
Okay, you know what?
Doug, you gotta go. Doug, you gotta go. You can come in one more time later.
I love Doug.
I mean, he's really the star of the episode, isn't he?
He's the star. His name's in the title. Sorry.
Is what got you thinking of all this when she said that? Because when she said that John and Yoko wrote Imagine at that restaurant, I was like, oh my God. And then I realized they probably were on an absolute metric ton of something.
Of drugs. I mean, it's the most stoner slash like LSD song of all time.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Pretty crazy. Whoa.
But you go up to Ojai and I'm telling you something. Purple Mountain Majesty. Say
above
that.
Above the fruited plain. Say that.
It
there
was
that many
so
fruits.
Beautiful.
I know. We were the only fruits there. Let's just say that.
It was a very straight energy in Ojai. That's for sure.
I'm just saying there's no fruited plains in Ojai. I don't think. But It's really lovely. Oh, no. What got me into the Beatles thing was just like, I mean, Cecily talking about them like really like stirred something in me. Kayla Sturback, my good friend from high school, she was on the improv team with me. I hope she's doing well. I've done a bad job of reconnecting with her, but she was like the big Beatles girl. And Kayla had the best music taste because she was the one who was like, you got to listen to the new Fergie song, Fergalicious or London Bridge or whatever, while also being like, do you know who Elliot Smith is? Do you know who Sufjan Stevens is? I was like, this girl gets it.
That's the embracing of high and low that we need in life. And people need to be more like,
Miss Kayla Sturback.
Mm-hmm.
And she, oh my gosh, she was the one to like, she was so fucking cool. And we saw Borat together. And like, she was a fucking cool. And guess what? Was also obsessed with Kirsten. Looked like Kirsten a little bit.
Wow.
Like told me, she was like, you got to read The Virgin Suicides. And you got to watch it. I was like, you got to know about Jeffrey Eugenides, whatever. And I was just like, this girl, she was one of those, like, I think let's make up a new term. Okay.
For iconic high school girlfriend?
Well, no, not even high school. It's like a cultural Sherpa, a cultural guide, a cultural like steward. She was a cultural steward. She introduced me. I'm like my, I think Yang, my sister is definitely that, introduced me to a lot. And then by the time I got to high school, it was Kayla. Kayla like told me what was up. Anyway,
I think it's absolutely fabulous to say that someone was a cultural stewardess. That to me,
that sounds a little too like servicey, like, but you know, like, I don't think
that's you disrespecting stewardesses.
I'm not disrespecting. I'm acknowledging
to call it servicey and do that little handshake you did.
I'm acknowledging the power dynamic that is inherent in that outdated job title.
Okay.
But to say that someone stewarded me through something means that they put in care into like, you know, serving me something. Damn, I guess I've found myself in a little
hole
circular
there.
Circular logic thing. But who do you have yours? I think Sudi was probably one of ours, both of ours. Sudi was like a good one.
Yeah, I think Sudi definitely changed the way I saw a lot of things. In high school, it was a lot of the stuff I got exposed to. No, I really wasn't. I never really did. But I would say that it was a lot of my friends from my cross-country team, which I've discussed on this podcast. Yeah, like I had older friends, and like what made the cross-country kids different from the kids that did other sports is for me was they liked like classic rock and like fun rock music. Like that was the only exposure to Queen I ever had, which I loved. Cool. And, you know, it's for me, that was probably it, because a lot of this, I would only find something if it was really popular, and I didn't have that. I don't know. I have an uncle that was cool. I had one uncle that I remember it was really important to me that I play him Since You've Been Gone, because his opinion of it meant a lot to me. And I remember I played him the song and I said, I remember I was like 14 and I was like, it's very 80s rock. No. And he goes,
not now.
And he did. He threw me a bone. He was like, it is very 80s rock. And I remember being like, yes, got Uncle Chris to sign off on this song.
Uncle
Fuck yeah.
Chris.
Kelly is a rock goddess. It's interesting to think about. I mean, we literally this weekend in Ojai did some throwbacks with a couple movies.
We did.
We only watched old shit.
We only watched old shit. Actually, things from like things that came out between 2007 and 2010 was okay. So, reader, we watched Jennifer's Body and Reno 911 Miami, which we've recently talked about. I think with Sarah Squirm.
Yeah.
Both wonderful
movies. Well, Sudi had never seen Jennifer's Body, and we on this podcast, Las Culturistas, believe that Jennifer's Body is an underrated gem, and that actually it's one of Diablo Cody's best.
I think that's widely agreed upon. I don't want to say that
people
word.
Don't say that though.
Sure they do.
No, there's a disrespect of Jennifer's Body that happens amongst the mainstream conversation about it. They talk about it because I don't know. I don't think it's obviously not one of her more serious efforts, at least on face value, but there's a lot of very cool themes in there that I think we rediscovered in watching it again. And Megan Fox is great. And Amanda Seyfried is fucking great in it.
So good in it. So great. And I mean, yeah, you and Sudi talked about how it's obviously like Diablo Cody's queerest movie, but it's also like so about queerness without it being cheaply centered on the moment where like they make out. It's like, oh no, you can kind of like, it's, if you think about it, it's like, no, Amanda Seyfried, like that character isn't fully, maybe fully in love with this boyfriend, and that like literally she's getting fucked by him, and all she, and like she, because of this bond she has with Jennifer, is only thinking about her, picturing her, sensing her as she's getting, as she's being like penetrated. And so it's like, whoa, that is so, so rich, so great, like not too on the nose, like such a great piece of like queer cinema. I don't know.
I think that they've said this, but the maybe the marketing of it missed the mark, because yes, they marketed it at the time to boys, because it was like Megan Fox was, of course, the huge sex symbol of that time. Meanwhile, it's like deeply about female friendship and, you know, I believe like queer sexuality in high school and figuring that out. And, you know, there is a lot in there about like when a girl achieves a certain level of sexuality that men feel they can just take that from her. Because, I mean, Jennifer is murdered and assaulted in the film, and it's just, it's a really, it's a much more interesting movie than I think people thought of it at the time. And I also don't think a lot of people saw it, because there was this predetermination to not take her seriously, Megan Fox.
Right. And like, first of all, there were so many times in that movie where I turned to both of you and I was just like, how is she doing that? But which is not to like patronizingly be like, I didn't know Megan Fox could act good. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying like, there's just such a mechanical, technical skill in that and what she's doing. But like, no, literally she and Diablo Cody did like, you know, a 10th anniversary interview recently, like a couple years ago. Mm. And it's just the two of them talking to each other. It's such a good interview. It's such a great interview for the both of them. And they both talk about how it sucked and it was so maddening the way they marketed it and the way it tested and like all of these things. They were like, this is crazy. Like, this isn't what the movie is. And why is it about like tits and ass when it's like about something, I don't know, like so much more meaningful and nuanced and like, I don't know, layered. Yeah.
It's definitely worth a rewatch, because even in rewatching it, like I always, when I'm discussing the movie, it was clear to me when I saw it this most recent time that it had been a while, because I usually always say whenever we're discussing Jennifer's body that the only part of the movie that doesn't ring true for me is the sex scene between them. But then viewing of it, I was like, this actually works for me, because this is an actual erotic moment between them, because it's the first truly erotic moment of Amanda Seyfried's character's life. And especially in contrast with her sexual experience with her boyfriend in the movie, it just jumps out and you remember it because it actually means something to her.
And I didn't pick up on my first viewings of this movie. I've seen it at least twice before, but there's that moment where Megan goes, should we play boyfriend? Or like, what was it? Like, there's just like an allusion
to boyfriend, girlfriend, like we used to, or something
like that, where it's like, it's alluded to. And then in the flashbacks, it's like, oh, these girls are connected through literal blood.
Right.
And also through some like emotional investment where they've seen each other, where it makes sense that they're friends, first of all. And then it kind of makes sense that they would hook up that way. Especially after Megan's like coming off of like, spoiler alert, killing a guy, glowing, feeling like in her element, in her prime, feeling like she's empowered enough to like, for her, it's an erotic, for Jennifer, it's an erotic experience too, because she doesn't need to hook up with her. Mm-hmm. Like she's hooking up with boys and killing them because she needs to live as a demon, but she doesn't need to hook up with Amanda Seyfried's character out of necessity. You know, like she literally doesn't need to do that. And so it's both of them, for both of them, it's this pleasurable experience. Like that is, and why wouldn't female sexuality be anything but that for these characters? I think it's so great.
Yeah. And it's funny. And it's
so funny.
A lot of it really is super funny. The performances are good. Like even the supporting, the song, I'm telling you, that song really, and it's truly like, returning a lot throughout the movie in a really fun way. The fact that it's such a good hook, like, sort of makes the way that they sense. Get corrupted by him make a lot of sense, because he is this, like, you know, Adam Brody in the movie, he's great.
So
and
great.
He is this douchebag rocker, but then when he sings, it's this essentially like croony mid-tempo pop song that the girls swoon over, and, you know, ultimately he takes advantage of them. But it's just like, I don't know, it's just a much more interesting movie than I think people
mm-hmm.
gave it credit for. And also, oh, another thing that you have to think about too is, and still to this day this is the case, but the way movies get reviewed, it really matters, because and this is why we need like a diverse population in terms of who is reviewing the films, right? And the answer is not always, if it's a queer movie, get the queer person to review it. Just
no.
Because honestly, they're often much harder than anyone else on their own representation. That's a whole other thing we could digress about, which we won't. But I just think probably what happened at the time was, if it wasn't majority male movie reviewers, you know, seeing that movie and then spitting their opinion out on it, it was female reviewers in the context of film criticism at that time, which is, you know, you really do want to be taken seriously. And I just think so much the prism and the lens through which we see movies like that at the time, it really didn't stand a chance at getting taken super seriously. And it is an audacious script. And and she was a lightning rod figure, Megan Fox. And so I wonder if it gets released now, and I do think it holds up, how it's reviewed now. You know, I wonder.
That's a really great observation. Really great observation. You are the smartest girl.
You know, that's not true. I think the smartest girl is probably Greta Thunberg.
Greta Thunberg. You know?
Jen.
when you were Jen, Pantry Girl Jen. You were describing Adam Brody's band, you said croony, which I thought you were gonna did you mean to say Rooney?
No, but they were very Rooney-esque.
But it was very Rooney-esque. And do you remember Keane?
Yes, of course. Somewhere only we know. I love that song.
I thought that was the best song in the world.
It's a very good song. And that talk about like big old monster hook. If you have a minute, you know, that whole deal. Woo! I remember Blake Lewis did it on American Idol one time, and I was like, you better sing, because he was just beatboxing at the time, to completely date the world right now.
What a great belt on that, male belt on that song, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell me when you're gonna let me in. I'm getting dirty, no need somewhere to... And then, it's such a good hook.
I mean, literally, that like speaking of that time, you know what else I was obsessed with at the time, and is one of the best pop songs ever? So
tell me.
Like a couple months ago, it was like right when the pandemic seemed like it was truly ending, and then the Delta variant popped up. A bunch of us, like, we all went
this
to
this is July.
Jared was there.
This is full 4 months ago.
Right. Yeah. But we all went to this thing in LA, which was like it was truly like a pop of the 2000s party.
Was it at Akbar or no?
No, but I told you about it. I don't know what venue it was, but I'm telling you, a couple
are you about
songs
to say
came
going
on.
Down?
Sugar We're Going Down has to be one of the best pop songs ever. It is so good. And
it's
also
so
another song
good.
That came on and hit me in my fucking
I think we talked about this. Oh yeah, what hit you in your prostate?
Mr. Brightside, bitch.
Oh, don't even
get me started. Mr. Brightside. It was like as if Big Bro was fucking me again.
Really? Talk about this synesthesia of hearing the song and feeling that you were getting penetrated.
Coming out of my cage, and I've been doing just fine. Gotta be down because I want it all.
So you're saying there's like a kinetic energy to, I mean, that Hot Fuss, that is one of the best. That is one of the best albums of that decade, 100%.
They were so good. And all these things that I've done, love. I mean,
I thought that was the best time, truth, and hearts. And that guitar, just that instrumental stretch.
Yeah.
I want to stand up. I want to let go.
Yes.
So good.
No, you don't. Oh my God. Yeah, that was a really good era. And at the time, I was like afraid of Panic at the Disco. But then they played like I Write Sins Not Tragedies at the event. And I was like, wow, this is something that is important.
so good. And Smile Like You Mean It. I'm sorry, I'm still on the Killers. Like,
oh yeah, like, but I'm just talking about holistically as a time period of music. Like, that was truly, but talk about, like, that was formative music for us. I mean, being in high school, you never forget. Like, everyone's gonna have that. That's just it for us.
It's the attachment in that critical time and, like, love that the kids have this music now, because I think it is a very good time in music. But something so precious and nostalgic, not to wax too wistful about it, but it's so, it's so powerful. I'm going to make a playlist.
You're so good at making playlists. You know that all the readers that know they know a thing, know that one of Bowen Yang's superpowers, you have the gay power of playlist.
It is one of the gay powers. Can I just say, though, lately I've felt very self-conscious about this thing that I do, where I'm like, who am I to be so histrionic to think I'm going to put together songs that other people have made and kind of curate them? Oh God, that word.
You're not saying I'm a curator of something. You're just saying, like, or it's like something where it's like, now take me seriously, or like, this is good. You're doing something that you enjoy and sharing it. Just look at it like that.
And I've been doing like fun little moods. I did my boss battle music. I've done like city pop stuff that like everyone already knows about.
Everyone, like, I love it when you do that.
I'm saying people know about city pop outside of this podcast. But I think we need to make like early, like mid-aughts when we were in high school, that music. We've talked about like Taking Back Sunday. I feel like this is a slightly different adjacent area to me, where it's like, honestly, not ashamed to admit it, was obsessed with Switchfoot.
Oh, love Switchfoot.
Especially after Walk to Remember. It's like, that was peak Switchfoot.
Yeah, I liked them too.
Because they did a cover of Only Hope.
Yes, they did.
And then he fucking goes for the belt on the bridge.
Well, he can sing that guy.
I'm bringing it back. Yeah. Oh, so good.
Like today never happened. I mean, there's so much good. It's just like, and again, I wish I hadn't been so afraid to like what I liked truly in high school, because otherwise I
genuinely liked that. And other people liked that too.
Yeah, because they were the only thing I really was like, no, I don't like them, despite the fact that I probably did.
Panic at the Disco was
Panic at the Disco and Good Charlotte, because it was the emo of it all.
I loved Good Charlotte.
Right,
so
but the
much.
Emo of it all was not something that I could cop to liking at the time for some reason, for whatever reason.
No, that makes sense. But I mean, God, I just, what a fun little time. Like kind of like matched. Oh my God, did you ever listen to Stars?
What is Stars?
Your ex, Set Yourself on Fire, Your Ex-Lover is Dead.
Oh, I don't know this.
Oh my God.
You've stumbled on one of my blind spots.
Oh, you're gonna fucking freak. If you're in the mindset to go back to that time, this is like something, I don't think they were ever on Grays in like the early seasons, but like it would be like something that they would play on Grays when like, you know, like Derek and Meredith would like pass over each other in the hallway.
Right.
Like,
so my favorite type of music. Basically, my favorite type of music was Grey's Anatomy climax scene.
Well, can you? Okay, so the music. Literally. I think we've talked about her before on the pod. Alex Pistavis. I'm not even looking at anything. I can just recall her name. Mm. The music supervisor for Grey's Anatomy for many seasons. I don't think she works there anymore. But she was also the music supervisor on the OC.
A perfect woman.
A perfect woman. But like, truly someone who crafted musical sensibilities and a literal tastemaker.
Absolutely. Like,
was soundtracking all of our teenage years alongside, you know, Ryan and Marissa and everybody, you know, and Seth and, oh my God, what was
Summer?
Summer. Perfect music for that show.
Yeah.
What an important job. If you're a music supervisor and you do that job well, that can be one of the most impactful jobs in showbiz.
Yeah. I think that, the music of any project is like so... Like, I remember, like, when Jared was putting his movie together, like, we were talking about the music so much, and he loves music so much, like, and so I'm so excited about the musical element of 3 months, especially because Troye Sivan is starring in it. You know, and actually, I've heard some of the music that he's done for it, and it's so good. But
I think Jared played me one song.
He did.
I was like, whoa.
This it's really,
really good. Yeah,
people should be excited about what Troye Sivan is going to bring in the next year or so. Like, which is really super exciting.
Saying something, because we've been excited for many years.
I've loved Troye since I first fucking saw him. When I saw like a little twinkie pop star who was just, I mean, when he was on SNL and just like fully like, giving it.
That was during Bloom era. Yeah. But I was loving Troy even before that.
Oh, yeah.
It was
since like Blue Neighborhood. Youth. Yeah.
Blue Neighborhood is, Blue Neighborhood, the song Blue Neighborhood is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. But Troy, talking about Troy.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, everyone should be psyched about the turn that Troy's career is about to take, because ooh, it's going to be very, very cool. Okay, so wait, I'm loving living in this nostalgia era.
We can move on.
I know, but I also feel that it's a connector. Because yes, one thing that's resumed this year, which we're both into, we haven't talked about yet.
Survivor.
Is Survivor. So this episode pissed me off because there wasn't a tribal
council.
There was
no tribal at the end, but a fun twist.
But a fun twist.
A fun twist that might not actually have much consequence. I think it'll be like a nothing burger by the next episode.
Are we both loving this? I mean, the season has a main character.
The season has a main character. Her name is Shan, also known as the Mafia Pastor.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the most compelling bio packages you could ask for in reality television.
I mean, literally, I'm loving what they're doing narratively with the season, because I feel like you're really getting to know all the
quick
characters, as it were. And they're doing this thing where, like, in the narrative, they'll drop it all away and you'll see, like, footage from their old life. They never used to do that.
Very Great British Bake Off.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like maybe the show is being edited by a different person, or the show, or the whole series has a different take on what it's doing in a way that I'm really enjoying. I'm loving the season.
I think they really took it seriously. They were like, after 40, let's reset it in some way. Not hard reset, but let's reset it in some small aesthetic ways that will actually make a big impact. And narratively, I think that is really reverberating. And I was saying, when you were like, you're getting to know these people, we're only like 6 episodes in. It's early days. I mean, we got to the merge, but it's early days. And I'm like, but I feel like I kind of have a read on these people. And I think there's room to be surprised and delighted and shocked. But I feel like I'm already really attached to these people.
Well, you know, you notice now more than ever that casting is everything. Because the people on this season of Survivor, they're all interesting and dynamic. And it's also the most diverse group there's ever been.
Yes.
So that's been a real strength of it. But it's also like, you compare it to this season of Drag Race UK, it's like, oh no. That just goes to show, like, a whole season of television can live and die on casting.
Well, literally, I mean, like, All Stars 2 is like a perfect example. Like, you have
absolutely
stacked people on that cast.
Yeah, I mean, U.S. season 13, incredible cast.
Incredible casting, but it's like, and for an all-star season of a show, it's like, that's different because you're pulling from, you know, past contestants. But, you know, this is so, I think they did a great job on Survivor this season.
Yeah.
I think Jeff really likes them, if that means anything. I'm loving Jeff this season.
He is on one, and I love it.
Love that. Can you just name another legend? We don't stand too many straight white cis men on this pod.
He would be.
I mean, maybe we do. I'm sure we do.
Do you think he would ever come do this show? He wouldn't get it.
He would.
Yeah.
He knows how to talk to a queer person. Clearly.
So right.
Like, there's been queers on the show since season one.
Okay. Do you remember in the first episode when he was like the whole compendium on guys?
Yeah,
when that
was
happening, I was like, I kind of was rolling my eyes because I'm like, is this performed? And then I was like, no, you know what?
I'm still
knowing
on the fence
that
about
I know, knowing that I what I know about this person, like, yeah, is this definitely happening on CBS in a way where it's like, look at us having the conversation, sure. But also, I bet he genuinely wants to respect everyone on that show.
He wants to know, and not for any like eye roll compulsory, oh, I gotta do this. I think he's genuinely like, I'm fascinated by people.
Yeah.
Especially people who want to do this show, and I want to make sure I like have a care and a consideration into like how I talk to these people as a group and individually. Like, he's God, like, he's like, he is the reality show host.
Yeah. I mean, if he were still like eligible for the Emmy, like, I mean, maybe people have just kind of feel like they've seen Survivor, but
he will get Lifetime Achievement Awards.
He's won a couple in the beginning, but he took himself out. But the thing too, for people that don't know what we're talking about, in the very first episode of this season of Survivor, he said, well, you know, one of my iconic things I say is, come on in, guys. And he then put to the cast, the second they get on the boat and they're first all introduced, he's like, who has a problem with me saying, come on in, guys? Because if one person does, I won't say it anymore. I want to move forward. I want this show to adapt and evolve and change in a fully well-intentioned way. And
no one said anything.
Well, the one queer woman, not the one queer woman, but one of the queer women, Evie, said, or you know what? I believe that they're non-binary.
they refer to themselves as a woman.
Refer to themselves as a queer woman, but I believe in press materials after the show that they're non-binary. So let's just refer to them as they and say they said that they did not have a problem with come on, guys, it's a colloquialism. Then later in the episode, another queer contestant, Ricard, said, I thought about what you said, and I don't think we need come on, guys. And so Jeff has retired come on, guys.
Just like that, in a way that was not like begrudging. Literally, he made the terms clear. If one person has an issue with it, I will not say it anymore. And then one person said it, and then he was like, at a different time.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, great.
What if he had been like, actually, that was a thing for yesterday and you took too long, so I'm going to keep saying it.
I think his brain is on another level, because to commentate or whatever on the actual challenges the way he does has done for two decades at this point, that takes like such a skill, such an awareness of how entertainment is communicated, of like how to like just tell a story.
Right.
I just think he's a genius.
And you know, the fact is they don't always get it right on that show. There have been whole seasons of the show which are like unwatchable because of the way they bungle certain social issues. I'm thinking specifically about season 39 with Kelly Kim being assaulted and that he was not taken off right away, but
or fucking what's her face, the Cops R Us girl.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's a whole thing in of itself, yeah. Sarah. But the fact is, CBS, I don't think there probably is a more conservative viewership. There's a loyal viewership of CBS, which is older and male, which is why they have NCIS fucking every city and the CSIs and all that.
And the impact is huge on Survivor.
Right. And so this is still a very widely watched show. And so the fact that conversation happened, even if I thought to myself, like, who are they doing this for? The fact that conversation is happening on a show like that, it is important. And I do see the value in it.
I'm sure there was blowback from
There was. Ricard was saying he got a lot of hate for bringing it up again.
But honestly, I'm positive. In fact, I probably remember reading this that week that a lot of queer people who watch Survivor being like, oh my God, what a fucking eye roll.
Yeah.
Well, then it sucks. It's like they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't.
That's kind of what I'm saying about as queer people, maybe that moment actually isn't for
it's not for you.
Us as much it's as not, it is
it's
for
not,
people.
It's not for me. It's not for me at all. I'm like, you know what? I will say publicly that I will every now and then throw around to guys when I know I'm in mixed company.
I do too.
In terms of gender. And I'm just like, I would think that, I don't know. I mean, that's not up to me to say, but like, I'm not even asking myself that question the way that Jeff is. And I'm sure a lot of other people identify with this. Like it feels like excessive or gratuitous or something. And
right.
I don't know. I think about that Wahim episode all the fucking time from Shrill. The episode that Sudi wrote that you were in. I talked about it with Vanessa the other day. I was like, I think about that episode all the time where it's like sometimes when you think something is for you, it might not be, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's for someone who needs to hear this because they don't have the same sort of social environment contours. Their awareness is not as filled in as yours, you know? Like, I think that's what we have here.
Well, I remember when, because we were watching separately, obviously, but when it got to that point in the episode, I texted you and I think I said something like, LOL, this compendium on guys. And I was like, what do you think about this? And you were like, it's eye roll, but I guess it's not for me to say. And then I realized, I was like, yeah, it's actually not for us to say. It's for someone who wants it changed to speak up and say. And then someone in the episode did do that. I have started to, you know, because guys is such a colloquialism, it's such a cultural colloquialism, that it is that one thing where when I was first brought to my attention to maybe eliminate it, I think there was a defensive thing where I was like, really, we can't say like, hey guys, like, even though it's like, you know, well-intentioned. And then I really thought to myself, like, you know, it's never going to bother me. So it's not for me to say. And I've started taking it out of like, you know, if I'm writing an email, like I will take that word out. If I'm using social media in a way, I will take that word out. I'll say folks, I'll say all, because it's easy for me and it helps people feel good. So why wouldn't you do it? You know?
Sure. I should not be bringing this up, but I feel like there was like internally some like queer blowback on people. I think now a lot of queer people that I know are like eye roll of all eye rolls when they see folks with an X written out in an earnest way. And I'm like, see, like, is there such a thing as like overcorrecting?
There absolutely is, but you have to do that to arrive at a place that's, I mean, I would, it's, I mean, this, it gets into dodgy territory when you say this, but I do believe that there has to be an overcorrection when there's been such an, this is not the right word, but undercorrection. You know what I mean? Like when something hasn't even been broached at all and it's been damaging to people, it's actually okay that we go a little too far, you know?
100% agree.
And it's like that with, you know, and not to get into the cancellation of it all, like the narrative that, but sometimes I'm like, you know what? If people have to answer for past behaviors that are not necessarily like abject, harmful, even if they're good people that have to have an uncomfortable moment, that's actually okay. Because in the grand scheme, we need to have a reckoning about things like this and get to a place where we're living in a world of equity, of fairness, of, you know, everyone being respected for their humanity, not just some antiquated way of referencing like people or relating to people. You know, it's about humanity. Mm-hmm. And it's actually okay if we overcorrect sometimes. So the conversation to me, even if in the moment I was like, are we really doing this? I get it now and I respect it.
I agree. 100% agree. Let's talk about these remaining survivors. Well, first of all, there's stars on the cast. Even someone like Voce or Jeannie, I'm like, I wish I could have seen more of them.
It hurts. Like, this is the first season I've watched in a while, and I did watch a ton of seasons, as we know, as did you. Like, where this season, when you lose people, it's hurting. It's competitive. It's high stakes. I'm telling you, readers, I know you, if you were listening to us all throughout the summer, you know we had our moment with Survivor. It is not ending. This is another great season.
Two summers ago.
Wow, fuck.
I know. We're at that point now where we go two summers ago.
Oh, it's been
summer
years.
Summer 2020. It's been years.
Oh, it's been years.
Well, it's been like a year and a half, let's just say, and change. But Parvati was summer 2020.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we love you, Parv.
We love you, Parv. Zeke was summer 2020.
Oh my God.
But we go way back. We go way back with Zeke.
Of course. It's a great season. I think that Shan is the one to watch. And I think that, you know, it's almost that thing of like when you watch a reality show so much or any television and you start to see it with TV brain,
you see the patterns. Yeah. There's pattern recognition. Yeah.
The narratives are built in. Like you can pretty much tell who's top three, I think.
But I love the narratives though.
Me
it's
too.
One thing to like see the narrative for what it is, but I really like this narrative.
Me too. I'm obsessed.
What do we think? I mean, we're recording this on November 1st. I feel like the Erica thing, I hope it gives her some intrigue because I feel like everyone on that tribe is, we haven't really gotten to know them that much, but I kind of love that everyone dislikes her. I'm sorry. I will publicly say I cannot stand Sydney. Cannot stand her.
Yeah, I think she is a fun character to watch, certainly if the island has a bitch goddess this year, it is Sydney. It's unrivaled.
It's actually not her.
Who is?
I don't think there needs to be one.
I love it as an archetype, but I get what you're saying.
I don't mean to ascribe this word to her, to Shan, but if you want to, like, someone who is like just coming for you and is playing this game so well and like is not afraid to like fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, Shan is your bitch goddess.
No, she has a shiv. Yeah, she's out here.
Parv was never, like, the bitch goddess to me. Parv was just, like, a great, like, hot girl who knew, like, her power.
Mm-hmm.
Sydney is just, like, I'm just, like, no, you stop it. Where she's, I think she was, like, fishing at one point, and she was, like, I don't know, she just, like, bragged about herself in a way that was just, like, not self-aware whatsoever.
She said something like, the girls on the show are never like me. I'm out here actually providing for the tribe in the way that like Ozzy would or whatever. Like she's like,
no, it was something else. It was something that really got to me. And I was like, ugh.
Her humor is not landing with you. Let's say that.
No, her whole vibe is not landing with me. And maybe it's because we all know that girl. I don't know. I mean, we all know all of these people. But Shan, Shan, I love.
I love Nasir.
Nasir is a star.
He is coming out of the woodwork for me. Like, and you know what I love about him? Like, when he's succeeding in the show, I'm happy. Like, and
me too. Like, and that doesn't happen with a lot of people,
right? Like, it's like he is sort of only has good intentions, and it's very.
But it's still
hero's journey.
Very hero's journey. Good intentions. Still very strategic player. Very good physical player, kind of like a Yule, checks a lot of the Yule boxes. Like,
interesting.
Like, obviously not the same person as Yule, but like, I'm like, okay, like,
I'm not paying tribute to Nasir as much as I was Yule. Let's just say that.
No, I mean, Yule, it's like a god, fully a god.
Cum factory. Call me the cum factory. He's so fucking hot. And Ozzy was so hot too. And you know, Ozzy has OnlyFans.
Yeah, but it's just like him, like, yanking it.
No, that's him fucking chicks.
I don't know, dude. Ew.
I'm sorry.
You and your straight porn fetish. Sorry, I don't mean to kink shame.
That's okay. It's actually Rule of Culture number 104. Straight porn is kink.
That's true. Well, Matt, I say, you know what? To be honest.
What?
She's tired.
And also, I have something to do. So we can move on. I don't think so, honey. I wanted to just touch on one thing. As the morning show correspondent for the show, I felt like I should just tell everyone.
Oh, please. This is so important.
Spoiler alert.
Fast forward like two to five minutes from this.
No. Not even. It's going to be quick. Steve Carell drove off a cliff. So the third graders are cackling writing this season. It could not be more insane.
The teacher's not even in the room anymore.
They're on vacation. The teachers left for vacation and forgot to get a sub.
The third graders came to school of their own volition to be like, we love this so much. We're having so much fun writing this show that they came to school.
And now he's going to drive off a cliff. Yeah. And he's dead. Okay. So know that I'm here to let you know exactly how much fun the third graders were having writing the morning show. They're having a blast. They're having the best week while the teachers are not in the class.
I'm happy for them.
We wish the best for Dorit Kemsley. We hope that it wasn't staged.
You better take that back.
No, I don't think so, honey, is going to be Dorit related.
Oh, okay.
What else? I think that it might be time for, I don't think so, honey. I just wanted to touch on a couple because current events are happening as we speak. Did you watch the Potomac finale?
I watched the Potomac finale. I missed Salt Lake City. I will watch that tonight. Potomac finale. You know, Vulture was I forget her name, but she writes wonderful recaps for Potomac. Mm. And she pointed out something very interesting. She was like, all of the franchises for Housewives in the pandemic have really struggled with like a crawl to the finish line. Mm-hmm. And it's okay because it's like, it's hard to, because I guess there's still all these limitations around shooting with COVID that it's really hard to like, produce story out of what they're, you know, what they can work with. And anyway, but then she also said this funny thing where she was like, I forget what the context of the sentence was, but she said that Robin has been acting like Squidward all season.
Yeah. Very, very Eeyore.
Just like, and it's sad because that's not the Robin we love. You know?
Yeah, I do feel bad for her though, because that woman wants to get married so bad. I'm just like, can we just have the wedding, please? I can't believe we had a wedding this season. It was Karen's second one and not
Karen's
Robin's.
Vow renewal. Juan was being all kinds of fucking stupid this episode. I was like, why did he drive off at the mere mention that he was not present as a father?
He was like a main character in this episode. And then when he was like mediating the Michael and Chris conflict, I was like, I don't know. And then I was really happy that Candace called it what it was, which was the white privilege of it all. The fact that Michael is even allowed to be there is insane. Assaulted crew members. And let's not forget about that one.
Fucking crazy.
But looking forward to the Nicki Minaj hosted reunion. That's for sure.
I need Nicki to fucking destroy Giselle and Ashley Darby. Destroy.
It'll happen.
I'm done with Ashley. Ashley, I'm like, you're not even that fun or funny. I mean, I'm talking about these people. I was thinking last night about how Bravo went live with Brooke Ashley, one of our favorite Housewives recap.
Loved.
But they went live with her and then they surprise brought in Ashley Darby and then Brooke was stuck to her guns and was like, hello, like basically was like, did not care.
She said, Ashley, this season is wearing me thin. And she said it to her face. And I was like, oh my God. But her face when Ashley Darby came on the live, because it was like a surprise. They were like, guess the mystery housewife in the chat. And she hates Ashley Darby so much. So when she popped up, funny. I saw her face and she literally was like, ah. loved it. I'm going to go live with her this week, I think. Yes, I think I'm going live with her at some point.
After Wednesday, after the part four,
I'm gonna DM her because we've been making plans to go live and have a glass of wine and talk Housewives, and so maybe after this part four of the Beverly Hills reunion, we'll do that. But watch the space for that.
Can I say I'm tuning in,
honey? You might even have to join up. You might have to join in.
Gonna have to tune in for that one.
Let's do I Don't Think So, Honey. It is a 1 minute segment that is iconic for the way that it provides opportunity to drag something in culture like it's never been dragged before. Yep. It is our famous segment. I would love to go ahead and do it.
This is perfect. This is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey's time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. People saying that Dorit and PK staged the break into their home, because actually think about this for a second. I know we don't love Dorit. I know we are all Team Garcelle, as am I, to the end of time. By the way, she's coming on Las Culturistas in April, and I said it out loud, so now it has to happen. But she's on the schedule. Okay,
she's
when her book
schedule.
Comes out,
we can't wait.
We are Team Garcelle 100%. But even not being Team Dorit, do you think that she would put her children through
30
that?
Seconds.
I mean, come on. Like, if that would be crazy for her to say, hey, break into my home while my kids are there. The trauma that would inflict on them. I understand she needs a narrative for next season. Is the timing weird?
15 seconds.
Because it was the same episode on the reunion where they talked about, like, Lisa, you got to put your dresses away or someone's going to come to your house. Like, they came to Kyle and took all her shit. And hours later, Dorit's breaking in. Home is broken into. Yes, it's weird. But do we think she'd be that craven? Maybe, but I don't think so, honey.
And that's 1 minute. I 100% agree. Because I did entertain for a second when we talked about it the morning after, I said, this seems suspicious. And only, I'm sorry to say, $100,000.
It was reported that the amount of money they got away with, the people that broke in, amounted to about $100,000. And then Jared was texting me and he was saying,
that's like
a couple of her dress. I mean, especially when she's got like $35,000 price point on her wedding gowns. I was like, that's probably a couple handbags, a couple dresses. Like, the fact that they were there, fully broke into the house, there was more than one of them and they only made out with that much is weird. Also, the fact that they were starting shooting on the new season that day. And the timing with the episode. It was all a little odd, but sometimes things in life are odd, okay?
I know. Stranger than fiction.
And that's a Taylor Swift song, okay?
Better than Revenge?
Golden Globe nominated.
Stranger than Fiction is one of her song titles? I don't think that's true.
Stranger than Fiction was this is crazy that you don't know this. She
was
nominated.
I don't know all Taylor, but Stranger than Fiction was, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It was actually from like a Will Ferrell movie.
It was from...
Wait, is that true?
The Will Ferrell movie is Stranger Than Fiction. But maybe Taylor has a song that's called Stranger Than Fiction.
Sweeter Than Fiction.
Sweeter Than Fiction.
Wow. I'm eating crow pie right now. It is from the motion picture One Chance. Sweeter Than Fiction.
Well,
shit.
I think that's going on Red Taylor's version. Pretty cool.
Ooh.
All right.
So now comes the time where it's Bo and Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. And I'm thrilled to say that now is the time where I can say on this episode that Bo and Yang, your time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Plastic packaging that's hard in that shell that you have to like get a fucking pair of scissors out and cut through it. You know what I'm talking about?
Go off,
like you buy an electric razor.
Uh-huh.
I cannot believe the death match that I was engaged in this morning. So I could open up this electric razor that I bought on the internet. And I had to take two different pairs of scissors to cut through because the stickers weren't coming off. The packaging is so fucking like
30 seconds.
Late 90s Costco bullshit,
such
you know,
bullshit.
Like such Ugh. Bullshit. And I could have cut myself this morning and I can't afford to cut myself. I have a roof to put over my head. Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm single and no one's looking out for me but me.
Ooh, 15 seconds.
Single people cannot be given these things. Otherwise, they will not be able to provide for themselves. And I don't want to get my caretakers involved.
5 seconds.
Spoon feed me my breakfast in the morning. All because I cut myself trying to open up a package.
And that's 1 minute. I want you to know one thing is not true. You are not the only person looking out for you. And if you ever need money, sister. You ever need money,
sister,
I will
girl,
send a check. Hun,
I'm struggling.
If you ever are struggling financially, girl. in that ivory tower of 30 Rock, I will send a check to the gig.
What is the top number for you?
I would send you $100,000, bitch.
Thank you, girl. Bitch.
I took it alone. I'll take it alone for the fish.
I went to the bank. I slept with the teller.
Oh! I know they're tired of me, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I say something? Whenever you're opening up, like,
what, do you know what I'm talking about? With the
yes.
And then there's like 5 million twisty things. I'm like, who is this protecting?
When you're opening up like Sharpies, when you're opening up like scissors,
that kind of single use plastic, I would consider that single use. Like, it's not getting recycled. Like 9% of plastics get recycled. That ain't part of the, that's in the 91%, baby.
No, because by the time you open it, it's a gnarled mess. I mean, you can't reuse. I mean, it's just pathetic.
You can't give that to a toy, to a child as a toy. They'll cut themselves just like me.
It really actually
it's
hurts.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, it's fully dangerous. It's a weapon. And if there were an earthquake, it would become a projectile if you had it laying around.
Girl, if it were an earthquake, it would become that.
That.
Say that. Okay.
Say that.
Well, thank you for supporting me financially and sort of, you know, argumentatively in that. I don't think so.
Honey. I support you all the way. And you
I
know,
support you all the way. You want to know something?
What?
I support you. And I'm not even joking.
You do.
Seeing you this past week, I thought, one of the most special people on this earth, one of the funniest, effortless. Jen was such a hit in such a way that I was like, yes, slay queen.
Thank you for saying slay queen to me.
It was such a funny, and everyone was like, this is the funniest. It's a IYKYK situation. If you know, you know. If you know the Pantry Girls, you know. And Matt nailed it.
Thank you.
It's one of those things. It's like, it's satire. You're making an observation about the world that people, you're excavating a truth. And you did that.
I thank my sister from the bottom of my heart. And I want to say that seeing you this week likewise was revitalizing. And everyone should watch this space on what we're working on. Okay. Now, I'm going to give us both a break.
Okay. Thank
because
you.
Because I'm actually going to drinks with Amanda Studi and Rachel Winitsky.
Oh my God. Tell them I say hi.
I really will. I know. It's like a little pop-roulette reunion. But in order to cap this off, I actually want to tell Doug, please come back in.
Doug,
because
you
this is
chance.
Your second time. You messed
what
up.
What do you mean?
Because
I have a. I don't think so, honey.
No, you haven't. I don't think so, honey.
I think we have to honor this, man.
Do it.
I know
and
you have to
do,
go.
Two things. You need to do your "I don't think so, honey," and then you need to end the episode in a song. You need to sing it.
Yes, you need to sing.
So do your "I don't think so,
hell
honey." I'm grabbing
no.
my phone.
Okay, Matt, I'll time you.
No. Doug Baim, this is your "I don't think so, honey." Your time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Remixing one of the best records of all time.
Oh my God.
We were talking about the Beatles and we're talking about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts
yeah,
Club Band.
Yeah, they did that.
I do not care if it's 50 fucking years old. It has a place in my heart.
Yes.
And 99%, I'm going to 110% of the whole world has heard this record a certain way. You do not
yeah.
have any justification to fucking mix it. I don't care if you're George Martin's son. Mother, grandparent, I don't care. You are
yes!
not allowed to touch
Go
that
off.
Fucking record. Wes Montgomery did a cover of a song off of that record.
15 seconds.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It's amazing. One of the best records of all time. You are not allowed to touch it. I'm sorry. Send me hate mail.
5 seconds
That's
and bitchy and strong. And bitchy and strong.
And bitchy and strong because people that did it are bad people. I don't think so, honey.
Wow. Yes! Huge. Seeing you pop off like that was amazing.
Doug, I loved that so much. And when Doug really goes there with the knowledge, with the music,
it's not, horny.
I don't say trivia. It's not trivia because it's not trivial. I loved that, Doug.
It's horny.
I want to hear you talk about music all the time. I really do.
Doug, we're going to collect
Legend.
Ourselves. And as we do, can you take
can
us
you
out with
a song?
I can't sing
Shut up.
Any song.
I asked you
I
to do
can't
something.
Sing.
So do
Don't
it.
Don't make me sing a song. Come on. I can't sing at all. I'm not
sing
kidding.
Sing an easy
Help
one
me.
Like Happy Birthday. Now you're making me look stupid.
That's a hard song.
No, it has
Happy
one
birthday.
Hard note, the third word.
Hard. I can't.
Here
you
we go.
Will, I've embarrassed myself enough.
Okay, I have a song.
Okay. Yeah.
It was 20 years ago today. So let me introduce you. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
There we have it, everyone.
I feel so unsupported.
Well, it's because you weren't supported by Doug. And including you in this episode was a big mistake. Because the way you threw us under the bus at the end. You know what? I gotta go have drinks.
Bye. Bye. We love you.
Love you, dog.